Interestingly enough, in German it's called Stiftung Wissenschaft und Politik, which has nothing to do with the other, which kind of, but it's a state funded foundation.
That's why I never know the English translation.
So Peter Lindl is a researcher in the Africa and Middle East research group at the institute. He's originally a political scientist. This is where his PhD is from the University of Erlangen-Nürnberg. He also studied history and philosophy and had research stunts at the University of Haifa and also at the University of Tel Aviv. And from 2016 and 22, he headed the research project Israel in a Conflict-Ridden Regional and Global Environment, Internal Developments, Security Policy and Foreign Relations. His current research focuses on the Israel-Palestinian and regional conflict, Israeli domestic politics, German-Israeli relations, and framings of the conflict. So most recently, he published an article with the same title as his lecture tonight, Staatsräson, German Debate. So, Peter, the floor is yours.
Gisela, many thanks for having you. Thanks to you that you came here. The room is full. Many thanks. And what I'm trying to do today is speak a bit about Staatsräson, of course, about the debate itself, but more the connections of the Staatsräson. What does it mean? Why are we discussing Staatsräson? Why is it discussed in Germany? Also outside of Germany, meanwhile, what does it mean for German-Israeli relations? What struggles is Germany seeing at the moment? And maybe also, what does it mean for German memory culture?
Let's maybe ask, is everyone familiar with the words? It's not translated.
It's not
used also, so maybe.
So
I'm
starting with the translation. So Staatsräson, the reason of state, is basically, and that's also a long, I didn't want to go into that discussion, but raison d'état. Raison d'état. So it's not, so it's basically basic. Nowadays, I would say it means reasonable, fundamental, reasonable pillars of the state, which links its identity and its foreign policy. That's what I would say describes it. But there's a huge discussion about that, because in its origins, it's a term of which was not coined, but basically which stems from Machiavelli. And Machiavelli used the vicinities for Machiavelli, and in this meaning, it was basically a term which was used to override laws, to override principles, because the only
the prince
had the Staatsräson, so he wasn't bound by any laws. And today, I really didn't want to go into that. Wanted to go into that discussion, but this is one of the main charges against the term in Germany today, because they say this is a term used, a term of the past, a pre-democratic term, and now it entered German politics again in order
Are
to.
Are you going to say that this is what Merkel and Angela Merkel used to
I'm going to say
okay.
So it gained popularity with Angela Merkel. When she said for 2005 for the first time that Israel's security is Germany's Staatsräson. That's the phrase. And by that we go a bit into that. It is overlooked that Germany had a very well established and already forgotten at the time discourse on Staatsräson, what Staatsräson could be. With all that kind of introduction, I just wanted to say that there is already an established democratic usage of Staatsräson. So I think the charges that this term is pre-democratic are faulty, to say the least, or wrong even. But so it's good that I started with the with that introduction in terms of what is Staatsräson, where is it coming from. We will see. We will come to the Merkel term. Yeah, but that's important. Since 2005, more or less, the term Staatsräson has been connected to Germany's relations to Israel, and especially to Germany's defense of Israel. And as we will see, this discussion has become, and I will show that in a few seconds, more and more polarized in Germany these days, because people claim, at least, but there's also some arguments for that, that Staatsräson on the one hand, or the notion of Staatsräson has become antagonistic to other central values of German foreign policy identity, especially the universalist values like international law, human rights, and so on and so forth. But let's just have a look at, I just brought some headlines that you see how this term has been discussed. Let's have a look. So, can you see, am I in the way?
Yes.
Yes? Well, you have to lie on the floor then.
You can get up also.
I can get up, okay, but then I can't. It doesn't work like that easily. I need to sit up, sorry.
Maybe on the side.
Okay.
Of the
so, now
it's
fucking
perfect.
You.
It's
okay.
Perfect. It's okay.
So, Staatsräson versus civil rights. I don't go into the details, just that you see what the headlines are. And in Germany, you have much more of those headlines. The Hague versus Berlin, German forces. So, international law and Staatsräson. We are all Israelis. On the other hand, the consequence of German Staatsräson, that was a notion. Right after the 7th of October, of course. Here, another article, German Staatsräson cast a long shadow on Israel and Gaza, so criticism that German take because of Staatsräson is blinding, probably says this article. What happens in Gaza, or the other way around, Israeli ambassador in Germany claims that if you want to use Staatsräson, then you have to go all in. There are no ifs and buts, and that was in the context of the ICC warrant against Netanyahu and Gallant. Here more headlines. Staatsräson versus international law. Staatsräson and the systematic erasure of Palestine. Once again, Germany is on the wrong side of history. That's basically claimed by both sides, actually. So what the right side of history today is also in dispute these days. Staatsräson, no question. So
it's the Eurovision, of course. That's the main aspect of
history. Probably. So to close that, basically, I have some German headlines. New antagonism, what I said in the beginning. You will find today a camp that is strongly in favor of Staatsräson, and will say Staatsräson should override, or at least insinuate, that Staatsräson should override international law, international norms, and stuff like that. A couple of. And you have, I don't translate now everything, and you have the different camp who would say no, international law should be superior to Staatsräson. Maybe just one headline, international law is German Staatsräson. And that's a development that is rather new, I'd say, that you have this strong antagonism, basically since the 7th of October, since the last 2 years, you have this development, that these are perceived as this by some camps, by some as antagonistic, that you should decide for one camp or the other, or at least that they are framed in a polaristic way. That's a thing I want to explain now, what happened to Germany, what happens to Germany's policy towards Israel. And for that, I want to go a bit more back in the past, and also become a bit more analytical for a moment. Gisela has already told me I have too many slides, so I have to check what we're doing. So, My take is that Germany's Israel policy, at least since the late 90s, maybe earlier, can be explained best through two prisms. One is the particularist prism, which emphasizes historical responsibility, the German responsibility for the Shoah, being perpetrators of the Holocaust, and therefore the responsibility for the Jewish people in general, and Israel in particular. That can be seen, you know, in terms of friendship, historical responsibility, and also Staatsräson, very particular notion. And in this notion, and I will show that in a couple of slides as well, Israel is ascribed by Germany a special role, because the whole idea of that is that Germany, the German state, are not Nazis anymore. We are post-Nazi state, and Israel is asked basically to be a witness of that. Our relationships to Israel, the friendship, the historical responsibility, is an attempt to show that there is a betterment on the German side, and in more in terms of international relations, and I'm not sure if we have scholars of international relations here, that's called basically Israel is a witness or a guarantor for Germany's ontological security, that the state is not, the new German state is not a Nazi state anymore. So that's the particularist view. Then you have a universalist view, which basically Germany, through which prism Germany basically views every country in the world. Of course, there are double standards. That's not the point here, but that's a take. Also, in a way, a consequence of Germany's lessons from the past. Very strong focus on international law, on human rights, on peace orientation, which has become, with the Ukraine thing, maybe a bit more dubious or maybe grayish, and also focus on liberal democracy. In terms of Israel, that can mean that we share mutual adherence to, or we share the same values, but it can mean also difference. It enables criticism of Israel, this prison. For example, settlements, policy, and stuff like that, basically. And I would say that's why Israel is, in terms of international relations, so special. Because when you look at other states, you would maybe say there is a normative and an interest-based take. My claim is, and you can criticize that, that's fine, and I'm waiting for that, but my argument is Germany's relations with Israel are predominantly normative, because both of those prisms are normative prisms, just very different ones. Here are some examples for how Israel is important for Germany's identity. This is already in 2018, and Martin Schulz, former candidate for chancellery and former president of the EU Parliament, has said in the Bundestag, with the existence of Israel and the recognition of its security, our country symbolizes a definitive departure from the crimes and the mindset of the criminals who plunged our country and the world into misery. By protecting Israel, we protect ourselves from the demons of our own people's past. It's very palpable, right? That's what we said here. And maybe also a notion to the Israeli position as crown witness. Chancellor Merkel said in Israel, when she got the PhD in Haifa in the speech, the ambassador of the State of Israel to Germany will be watching our behavior closely. You'll see how it is with the betterment. At the same time, you could see a rising criticism of Israel, especially 2010s, since Netanyahu took office in 2009, probably, honestly. Just two examples. Foreign Minister Steinmeier, now president of Germany, said in 2013, of course, the Israeli government under Netanyahu not only failed to take action, but above all, neglected too much what would have brought us closer to realizing a two-state solution and thus lasting peace in the Middle East. We can discuss if that's a correct statement or not. It's just important that the statement itself is important. And the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in 2018 think after the Hocas Dara settlement legalization law was, but maybe also the I don't know, but the confidence we had in Israel's government government's commitment to the two-state solution has been severely shaken. So this is basically saying, this is diplomatic language. So this is basically saying we don't believe you anymore. That we believe. So we could see both. Basically, a strong attachment to Israel and increasingly strong criticism of Israel. And this has become, especially in the 2010s, these were two parallel trends which strengthened parallelly. So the role of Israel for Germany's identity has become ever greater. And at the same time, the criticism of Israel in the 2010s has become ever greater. So there was already a tension there, which we will revisit later, because it's very important to understand the situation now. But it was a tension that could still be somewhat solved. There was not that much in the fall. But now let's go back maybe to the notion of Staatsräson, the reason of state, which was coined by Angela Merkel in 2005. It wasn't coined. She actually took it from a German ambassador who wrote a piece in a German journal. Tesla, exactly. The research of the article I did, that was, well, people even before that we used the term. And what is important to understand, or what can be shown already with the usage of this term Staatsräson, is a thing I said a minute ago, how the importance of Israel for Germany's identity has become ever greater since then. So 2005, Angela Merkel uses the term Staatsräson in her speech, 6 years of the Conservative Party. She says, basically, she mentions it in a row of five elements. Staatsräson was, reunification, which had already happened. It's Western integration, Western values, EU integration. I think she said also social Marktwirtschaft, a certain form of capitalism, German capitalism, whatever. Yeah, you know, basic German orientations, which in her mind would be the pillars, foreign policy pillars also, of the state, which combined with the identity. And then she says for the first time, Israel's security is German Staatsräson. Then she used it for the first time. And the important thing is now, this was the last time she will say it with other elements. So what I've said before, Western values, EU integration, reunification, she will never revisit that again. From now on, she will only say Israel's security is part of the German Staatsräson. So the other elements are implicitly mentioned as part of the German Staatsräson, but never again explicitly mentioned. And that's already an elevation, what we see here. That Israel is becoming more important for that. Later on, we come to that. Later on, people will even drop the part. Some of them, if you look at the conservative and the liberal parties, which is not in the Bundestag anymore, but they will often say Israel's security is German Staatsräson without the part. And that makes it, you know, this elevates the importance of Israel quite dramatically. But we'll come to that.
Just have to have a look at the watch.
How much time do I have? Why do I have to stop?
The class will end at
8:50. Yeah, okay, no, I have to stop
before. We would like to ask you some questions.
So, do I have, say, 15 more minutes? Is that fine?
Even more,
okay. So, that's a thing which is not that important for us, but it's important. I just mention it. It's important for the German discourse because no one, literally no one, is aware that there was an older discussion of Staatsräson. In Germany before Angela Merkel has picked up the term. And you can see that here. While it's basically research, I mean, how often the term is used in German newspapers. And to the left here, you see that absolute meaning, and of course it rises dramatically because you have more newspapers and more pieces written. But in terms and in relation to million tokens, so how often is it used to the amount what is written, you can see here it has, with the 1980s, a discussion which is almost at least important, or at least not important, but the usage was at least as high in relative terms. And no one sees that. And that's basically the discourse Angela Merkel has connected to it, because those five elements I mentioned at the beginning were discussed back then.
About what was it in 79?
Well, that's what the discussion. It was German orientation.
Okay,
West integration, does it go to the East? Rearmament, how the relations to the US?
Free market economy.
Yeah, exactly. That was it. And here, the mentioning of Staatsräson in the Bundestag. Also by, I mean, party lines, but that's maybe too difficult. But here you can see also, that's only absolute terms. But here you could see that, especially here after Merkel's notion in the Knesset and in the UN, you could see the rise. Interestingly, back then, only the liberals and the conservatives were using it. And later on, you can see that it becomes more of a term that is used by all the parties. You can see the rise here, which is, I think here we have 60 years of Germany-Israeli relations, and so on and so forth.
Just a clarification question.
Yeah.
Here it's Staatsräson with reference to Israel, or just
Staatsräson? Just Staatsräson, right?
So it could be regarding Ukraine, Russia.
No, I wrote about that in my article. That's
okay.
So you have here. I can say a word about that. That's no problem. So until here, roughly until the early 2000s, it basically has nothing to do with Israel, nothing. Then it changes. But it dramatically changes around 2015. Here it could mean it was often related to Israel, but not exclusively. For example, the liberals, the Liberal Democrats, were the only party that used in their party platform in 2013 the term Staatsräson, but they related to fiscal policy. And that changes basically in 2015, where the notion of Staatsräson is exclusively linked to Israel. You can see that you will find it in almost all the party platforms that Israel Security is Germany Staatsräson, especially after Angela Merkel stepped down. It became a thing that all the candidates had to use the term to show their statesmanship, that they are potential for the chancellery. So you could see how important this term has become in the German discourse for a long time.
It also became part of the coalition agreements. Every coalition agreement was stating the Staatsräson in relation to Israel, which was uncertain. You know, after Angela Merkel left, it was uncertain for Israel that it would become such a...
No, but after Angela Merkel left, it became stronger. Now, in the first moments.
Okay.
No?
Well, with the traffic light, you know, government, there was some question marks, and there was at least in the MFA in Israel, there were a bit of, you know... Would it be?
The notion itself, all the candidates with the, refers to the traffic light government, it's Social Democrats, the Liberals, the Greens, all of them would have it in their party platforms, and all of the candidates, I mean the Liberals didn't have a candidate, but would use it in their speeches, in the election campaigns, were asked, how do you relate to Israel? All of them would say, of course, Israel Security is German Staatsräson. As things stand right now, actually, it seems that the current Chancellor Merz wants to drop that notion for a variety of reasons. One being that it's a Merkel term and they have a difficult relation. Just on a side, maybe I'm not sure if it's a funny side note, but a side note to look at. There's former foreign minister that now, Guido Westerwelle from the Liberals, had also another usage of Staatsräson. He said the two-state solution is German Staatsraison. No? That's probably more different.
This is, by the way, what, I mean, if I may interrupt, yep, Merkel in her autobiography very strangely mentions, when she looks back, and at the time she said this in 2008 in the context of Iranian threats to Israel in the Knesset, and it was reference to that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
In her own autobiography, she suddenly says, what in fact I meant is support the two-state solution is the German Staatsregierung. Very strange passage in her autobiography that doesn't really match how she framed it at the time.
I kind of disagree, actually. I revisited the speech, the original speech,
yeah.
And you're right, the Staatsraison term appears only with link to Iran,
mm-hmm.
but at the beginning she talks amply about the two-state solution,
yeah.
that norms
mm-hmm.
need to be shared, so
but
it's kind of...
This is the only thing that she left retroactively while talking about that.
No, and the Staatsraison term doesn't exclude the two-state solution,
exactly.
but I mean, this is singular, that that Guido Westerwelle said that Staatsraison, two-state solution. So maybe to another
but
slide.
It was,
yeah.
2010, the Middle East peace process still goes on. After 2014, that would mean a clash with Israel. So the timing, I think, is of consequences here. Because after 2014, I don't think, you know, the government, any foreign minister would say that.
No one said it after. Maybe the timing is of it's hard to say. It's a singular statement.
Yeah.
Which
also says.
But let's go back to what you said, that the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs was afraid that the green, liberal, reddish government would drop the term. Yeah, I have something for you. The support for the term is the strongest with the Social Democrats and the Greens. Counterintuitively, what you might think.
Voters or?
Yeah, voters. Not. I mean, counterintuitively, then the liberals. So,
yeah.
And not with Angela Merkel, who coined the term from the CDU CSU. So, and that's by the way, not much in contradiction with other polls when it comes to the center left, and not the Linke, who is the far left. So that is particularly interesting. And what you also have is a mismatch between the electorate and the party lines. Because in the party lines, you would have the strongest support for the notion, but of course, the CDU-CSU, the conservatives, and the FDP. FDP is okay, but that's a clear mismatch between electorate and party line. But that's nothing analytical, just wanted to share with you that. Now, I spoke about that in the 2010s we had this rise of both elements. The universalist, which was mostly seen critical in Israel, but also the evocation of shared values was clearly there. And the particularist, which I just explained, really went up. Israel's standing was elevated in Germany's discourse. Then comes 7th of October. And 7th of October basically, I mean, meant that this very abstract notion, I'm speaking now of the political echelon, this abstract notion of historical responsibility, Staatsraison, whatever you want to have it, was clearly the guidance line what to do. Became from an abstract thing into shaping the policy, at least in the beginning. Just two quotes. The Chancellor said, Germany's only place now is on Israel's side. Foreign Minister Baerbock, these days we're all Israelis. That was someone in the first 4 weeks. And Germany's positioning was, I would say, quite clearly and for a long, long time, clearly on Israel's side, in a time when other countries already, some countries were pretty early on, with the heavy criticism of the war. I think Spain criticized the war already in October. But still, Germany was, I'd say, until spring 2024, almost clearly on the particularist angle that this is, I would say, the only game in town. Still, the war evolved and criticism came. Was related to related to questions here. Memory culture prevents Germany from helping Gaza. So the international community charged Germany that is would be blind what is happening in Gaza, rightly or wrongly. That's not a not a normative statement. New York Times writes on Gaza: Germany's government faces pressure from all sides. And the longer the war evolved, the more the pressure was mounting up. Especially then with the trials at the ICC and the ICJ. Because you have to understand, while of course the while the particularist angle is indeed historical, the responsibility for Israel is indeed part of learning from the past for Germany, the universalist is as much. One of the lessons of the past for the German state is never again war, never again alone, and strengthening institutions like the International Criminal Court and like the ICJ. And here, especially with the ICJ, I have a good example which I will show you in the next moment. We start to see how this particular prism and the universalist prism become almost non-bridgeable. And I'll show you something. Yeah, it's, this is the statement of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs after the ICC has just published the warrants for Netanyahu and Gallant. I do call that the situation ontological dissonance, because basically, especially the foreign ministry is in a position where they cannot say, well, we don't support the ICJ, because then you would hurt your own DNA, and you cannot say, fully, I embrace it, because then you would violate the relations to the DNA, the particularist point to Israel. So what do you do in a dissonance? You take note of something. You claim we are the strongest supporters of the ICC. It's rooted in Germany's historical experience. At the same time, Germany's history entails also a unique relationship towards Israel. And in the meantime, we examine things. So no positioning whatsoever. And basically, they say, yeah, we support the ICC. We're strong friends of Israel. But hopefully, we will never run into that situation.
They won't visit.
No. And so that's what I, you know, this is really, maybe this is the prime example. It's also very, I told to the foreign ministry, I think this, they were pretty happy with that formulation. I thought, no, you don't solve anything with that.
But one another way of looking at it,
yeah,
is actually signaling to Israel, saying, you know, we are in between a rock and a hard place. Just don't come. Okay? So
yeah, of course.
To,
no, of course.
It's not necessarily a dialogue with the court or with the two different kinds of prisons.
It's this. I mean, that was only published in German. I translated that, but of course, this is also a signal to Israel. But at the same time, you have to say. Now Chancellor Merz, who was back then the leader of the opposition, said, contrary to the rest of his party, no, we'll find a way to invite Netanyahu. Everyone was wondering how. And he claimed that there is a legal way, and I never saw that in my life, a letter of basically all the chairs of international law in Germany, there were like 120 chairs or so, wrote a letter, no, this is not possible. There was one single guy who wrote another letter, but the rest, all the chairs said, no, it's not possible. And therefore, and you can see how what I said in the beginning, how this antagonism comes into fruition, comes into life. Because especially, you know, yeah, they try to avoid a thing, and of course that's signaling to Israel, that's true. They also say, think Netanyahu is also aware of that. But if already with the notion of an opposition leader like Ben Merz, that no, I'm gonna allow it, you run into a situation where people will say, well, okay, so now we came to the point that international law is not as important as our relation to Israel. And that's not a value judgment. That's just a description of a complex situation.
The complex situation becomes more complex when Germany's, not Stadtrazon, but maybe is Stadtrazon, to preserve international law when it comes to Ukraine and Russia.
Exactly.
So there's a clash, a direct clash. In those.
Yeah, exactly. Now Germany's accused of double standards. You know, Germany's running around in circle global south. Why? This war, yeah, Russia Ukraine is violating international law. You have to support us in the UN, blah, blah, blah.
But you can also argue with Ukraine, the German way of thinking, never again war, is also not true, has changed.
It has changed, of course. It's changed. No, it has changed. I mean, that changed a couple of times with Fischer's, that has changed. But maybe also remarkable in that regard, because we often hear, of course, the argument in Germany from Israel that the ICC has no power because Israel is not part of the ICC. Yet, you have in Russia the same situation, Russia-Ukraine. Russia is not, but the Ukraine is, and therefore Germany accepts this line of argument that the ICC has competence, and therefore either you have a double standard or you must accept it here too. It becomes even, I don't have a slide on that, but just thinking, and again, this is not a value judgment, just to think about it, it becomes even more complicated, the whole discussion on genocide. Just think of the idea, and never mind if the term is right or wrong, that's not important right now, but the idea that Israel is basically the crown witness for Germany not being a Nazi state anymore, a genocidal state, being accused of genocide, you can't process that. But that's an aside. I have a couple of slides which I only touched briefly. Basically, that was the main point, but that you will see it also affects German domestic scene. So that's more about the war. So here with the... You have a couple of pro-Palestinian left-wing demonstrators who would run around with the slogan "Free Palestine from German guilt." So that's a clear attack, of course, on German memory culture, and of course also a question: where's the place for Palestinians in Germany? Cool. You have rise of anti-Semitism in Germany. There's a growing anti-Semitism for a while, but you have also a rise of since the 7th of October, it's quite palpable. Or maybe you can also say, or the next thing to say would also be, do I have a slide on that? In addition to that, there's also a strong struggle on how anti-Semitism should be defined. And there are the two definitions of the Jerusalem Declaration and the IRA definition. And it relates to all kinds of struggles, especially to what is called Israel-related anti-Semitism. So that's also part of the struggle in Germany. And maybe as the last thing, which comes maybe the closest to what I said in the beginning, or what has been charged against the notion of Staatsraison, that it's a Machiavellian term. Here's domestic intelligence should supervise professors at universities. That was the demand in the name of the Staatsraison. In the name of the Staatsraison. That was the demand of a conservative politician after several demonstrations at especially Berlin universities. But here again, you have several constellations. On the one hand, being critical of pro-Palestinian demonstrations because anti-Semitism goes against the Staatsraison, and then the idea that domestic intelligence in Germany should supervise professors is just absurd. This is so far-fetched that so far no one has ever thought of it. Tamsin, sorry. I wrote the, I was in a hurry and wrote the presentation, so pardon my spelling mistakes. But this is just to show how these two notions of particular and universalist have become quite an antagonistic constellation. We don't know where we are headed. Some conclusions from my part. First, I do charge German politics for not giving an interpretation how these two pillars can be bridged at the moment. There needs to be a lead. You know, there can be a variety from the left to right, whatever. If these are two important pillars of Germany's identity, it's the task of politics to give an idea how this can be bridged. If not, it's a failure of leadership. And that's what I tell them also in person. Secondly, what we probably see is a juncture in Germany's memory culture. German memory culture has, in the 2010s, as I had argued, been linked to Israel so closely, and has become so polarized, especially since the last two years, that I'm not sure if we, even on an elite level, will figure out a way how to find a unified memorial culture, as it was at least on an elite level over the last 60, 70 years. It changed, of course, in a variety of ways. Oh no, not 60 years, not that's bad. And then, of course, there's the question, where are Israel Germans? Germany's relation to Israel headed. That depends, of course, on the developments on the ground in Germany here, but there are quite some question marks at the very moment. I guess I stop here. Not on a happy note, but thanks for your attention.
Yeah, Odette.
Yeah, thank you very much. So I want to push you on the first point you said. You said that the Germans need to solve that way, but I want you to tell us what you think the solution is, because I have a solution in mind. And basically, I don't think it's an antagonistic thing, but I want to hear you first, or perhaps I'll say mine. But basically, I'm not sure that what we define as the Israel interest is in fact the Israel interest. That is the main thing here. I mean, that is always the elephant in the room. What is Israel interest? I mean, and for that matter, I'll be a bit provocative. I don't say I necessarily agree with this, but to a certain extent, at least, it's a good question. I'm not sure Germany wants to solve the conflict because it plays into very actually deep, and I think there is a solution to the conflict in general. This is my view, at least. There was at least, still is perhaps. And on a very, very deep level, which is not totally conscious, it's actually good to put Israel in a certain situation, which plays deep into, and it's not a big psychology, I think it's a very, very reasonable thing to do in a sense, but actually they prefer to stay in that situation, if not to agree. If you understand what I'm saying, so basically...
What was the last time, if not to?
Not to agree. Basically, not to have to push Israel into to actually what is Israel's interest in a sense.
Why?
Because again, provocative. I'm not saying this is necessarily my idea, but it's very. It plays while Israel is not solving the what is killing Israel within, in a sense, not necessarily my.
Yeah.
Provocative notion. It's actually playing to German guilt of the past. So basically, not solving this will actually benefit the German. I would not benefit the Germans, but actually plays into a very, very deep level of. Again, I'm not saying it's conscious. I'm not changing his conscience.
I know the argument. It's an argument that should be brought up.
Yeah.
Okay, shall we maybe go first, make a round?
Yeah.
In the order Yuval, Daniel, Elnat, Leo, Shmuel.
Thanks a lot.
Really fascinating.
Sir, please can
you
talk
to
me
one time.
Question and a couple of thoughts.
Yeah.
Raison d'état, not raison. It's weird. It's really general in German political discourse, but in relation to Israel, it's weird that's the category. Raison d'état is something about state, it's an autonomous field, its own interest, not necessarily universal or abstract. It's something that is, my understanding, categories is in many ways distinct and from ideology, identity, values. It's like the state is an entity in and of itself. And you use them. Now, your integration, your social harmony, whatnot, that makes sense. That's a state interest. Even if it was Israel military enterprise and its relations to Germany today, that makes sense as Stadtrison. The notion of identity and ideology and culture and memory to Stadtrison, it's weird. I mean, we show it's there. I don't understand why it's there. Because it's universal, right? Or it's structural, so it deeply politicized the notion, right? It's not up to debate because it's obvious. It's an autonomous interest of the state. So that's the question. The thought is very, far-fetched, I guess. You spoke about a particular aspect, and you talked about Israel as a witness to